Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. I'm your host, Alex Wong. Will Liu is on vacation today and tomorrow. So today I am joined by close personal friend, a friend of the community, one half of my favorite NBA podcast, Pound the Rock. It's The Scores, Joseph Cacciaro. Joe Cash, how are you, man?
I'm doing all right, man, considering I got to do a full hour with you.
Wow.
Right off the top rope.
Okay. Let me pick my energy up. Okay, I didn't know we were doing a house show or if this was WrestleMania or Survivor Series. I hear an alarm going off.
Dude, I was
going
to say,
no joke.
Immediately after I just flamed you, the fire alarms in my building said, this is not a joke. This is not a prop. But
this is part of the workplace hazard. This is part of the workplace hazard. We're going to see if this goes on. If it does, I'm just going to ask you to go on mute for a little bit. But for now, I think we're okay. I think this is a good prop.
It just stopped.
Yeah. Wow. Will Liu goes on vacation and decides to go to your condo. I won't dox you and name your exact address. He went to Corktown and pulled the alarm. It's all good. So before we get going, such an honor to have you on. I know, me and The Score had to negotiate for about 2 weeks to get 1 hour of the captain on the show. But honestly, though, love the work that you're doing at The Score. You already know this. I already tell you, but you are like a multi-platform guy. You write great features. You and Joe Wolfon have the great Pound the Rock podcast, and you're doing work on YouTube. Let the people know before we dive into the Raptors and all these other topics where they can find all your stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. So like you mentioned, obviously the main source is in the app. You can read my features there as well as Wolfon's and all of our other great feature writers and news writers. I had a feature go up today on just the absolutely insane season Joel Embiid is having and how that might and should change the equation for the Sixers when they're talking about trading Ben Simmons. Then you mentioned your favorite NBA podcast, Pound the Rock. You can find that Tuesdays and Fridays, wherever you get your podcasts. And then, myself and a bunch of other really good, talented people on the team come together to make some great videos at the Scores YouTube channel, kind of tackling the trending topics in sports, but in a lighthearted way. So, definitely check out all three of those platforms.
No, definitely, man. And if my opinion matters, I definitely vouch for all of Cash's content. So on today's show, we're going to talk about how I'm tired of the Raptors being a 500 team and just alternating good and bad performances. We're going to talk about later how to improve the All-Star weekend experience. And if we have time, we might even introduce the Raptors Museum of Artifacts, which I'll explain later. But first,
time for that because I got a banger for that one.
All right, man. Stop yelling at me on this show. All right, Cash, please, man. This guy's threatening me. This guy's got the space to promo his own stuff. But first, we must talk about the biggest topic, which is the divide in Toronto sports media. No, I'm just kidding. I always told Will I was going to do that whenever he left the show. So I wanted to ask you, Cash, the last time you were here, you blew our minds when we asked you your favorite on rice dishes. You said barbecue eel and minced pork. We were expecting something real basic,
am I not a friend of the community or am I not a friend of the community? Why were you expecting basic from me?
Not to judge you, but I wouldn't have been surprised if you said sweet and sour pork. Okay, Cash?
I'm insulted.
I know you're insulted. We'll take this off air. Don't worry. But I wanted to complete your top five list, continue to prove that you do belong in the Friend of the Community Hall of Fame. What are your three other on rice dishes that you would pick to round out your top five?
Let's go with General Tao, which I know is a lot more basic, but I'm not going to pretend I don't consume a lot of it. Got to go with bulgogi. Anytime I'm in one of Toronto's Korea towns, either uptown or downtown.
Wow.
I told you the last time too. I also gotta, give love to my own community and say any sort of risotto dish is good too, Some high quality mushroom risotto dishes. Any giant portion of jerk chicken on rice with coleslaw mixed in is pretty good too.
Man, you're killing me, man. You're making me want to go to Loblaws after and hit up the Italian deli section. As you know, that's one of my favorites. It's either Taverniti or Loblaws. I'm a high-low guy. You know what I'm saying? Oh, man. All right, 55 more minutes to go, Cash. Hang in there. So The other thing I want to ask you too, as a friend of the community, is if we're sitting down at dim sum, what are the first five items you're checking off the list, Cash?
This guy really asked me to do an hour of radio just to go through Rollson's entire menu.
I just want you to help pick my menu, my dinner order tonight.
The soup dumplings, you know, the dumplings where when you bite into them, there's like hot broth in them.
I think it's a type of specifically those. So specifically those.
Okay. The steamed pork buns.
Okay.
I don't know what it's called, but it's like the sticky rice. I think it's got beef in it and it's inside of a lotus leaf.
Oh yeah, those are classic, man.
I don't know what they're called. I've got a bag of them
in my freezer if you want me to drop them off in Corktown.
Nice. Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, that's my payment for this this hour. But then there is, then I got to go with the standard, just spicy fried squid. Again, I know that's a much more basic dish. And then, I don't know, to round it out, some type of shumai dumpling, or I don't know. You've seen me reach for chicken feet before, so.
We've all seen you reach for chicken feet. No, it's there we go, man. To all our Asian listeners, I believe that's all our listeners. You know, when I say Chash is friend of the community, it's not a gimmick. It's not a gimmick. This guy came in so hot, his condo fire alarm went off the minute he connected. So Toronto Raptors lost last night in Chicago.
Oh, are we actually talking ball?
105. Oh yeah, man, we have to. It's it's part of my contractual obligation. So the up and down Raptors, they rallied once again. A very familiar script. Gave up 60 plus points in the first half. Valiant effort in the second half. Turned up the defense. Came up just short, even though they did take the lead briefly in the fourth quarter. Ended up losing by 6 to Chicago. They are now a perfectly mediocre 23-23 on the season. I wanted to just use this up and down theme to talk about this game, Cash. I guess before we even dive into the actual game from last night, like big picture, I know this team isn't competing for a championship. I know there's a building process to get there, but can I still be frustrated watching this team knowing that they could show up and be a great team one night and have a great half one night and then a terrible half another night? Like, it's frustrating for me.
No, for sure it's frustrating. But I think, you know, I think that's part of the growing pains associated with a young team and with a team that is, you know, if we're being honest, like you said, they're not a championship contender, but they're also further along than I think most teams with this type of average age or experience. And yes, Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam are, you know, mid to late 20s now. OG is kind of a young vet, but for the most part, this is a young and pretty inexperienced team. And I think the growing pains that you're seeing come with it, the 500 ball, the up and down ball that you're seeing comes with it, right? And the ability to play with any team on any given night, no matter where they are in the standings, comes with it. But so too does their vulnerability to lose a game to the Pistons or, you know, Portland without Dame. That's kind of part of the roller coaster and the adventure with a young, growing team like this.
Yeah, 2 games to the Pistons, by the way, just to fact check you, Cash. That was 2 disappointing games to the Pistons this season. No, I'm with you. I think, you know, understanding that it's building process. I thought it was interesting you said that they're further along than most people expect. I would push back only in that, are they really? I mean, I know that when we look at it, it's like, I can see all the bright spots, right? Like, OGs continue to progress on the offensive end. You know, I've been really impressed with Chris Boucher. I don't know what Dennis Rodman tape he watched, but ever since he watched that Dennis Rodman tape, he's really embraced that bench role. Pascal's playmaking, to me, you know, has been the number one most positive thing if you were to do takeaways from this season. We know what Fred's been doing as an all-star. Gary's scoring, even Scotty showing flashes of brilliance every night. Like, there's so many bright spots. But when I look at this team's record, when I look at the entire roster, I feel like they're exactly where they should be. Like, they are a 500 team. And to me, I feel like the Raptors need to be a little honest in that evaluation of how far they are in terms of where they want to get to when it comes to the trade deadline in the summer. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I agree with that. And what I'd say to that is I think if you're looking at it in terms of the way they've played this season and then the record that has resulted of that, I completely get what you're saying, that they should be better than a 500 team, if we're being honest. But I think if you were to go by not just the wins and losses, because again, we're not talking about a team that can contend for a title right now. But if you're talking about the actual, like, internal development, the the way maybe we view the upside and the ceilings of certain guys and guys that are expected to be part of this core the next time that they could plan on contending, I think that's where you look at it and think they're further ahead, right? Like, regardless of whether they are above 500, under 500, or at 500, I think you'd have to admit Scotty Barnes is way ahead of schedule, or maybe not ahead of where they had him internally, although probably that too, but definitely way ahead of where most of us or pessimists or just casual observers would have expected him to be when the season first started. I think Fred VanVleet, you know, ideally you don't have to play in this many minutes, and when the team is better, they wouldn't have to, but, you know, there's no doubt now that Fred VanVleet can be an all-star caliber player, you know, in the right circumstance. Pascal Siakam is back to playing not just the level of basketball that got him an all-NBA nod a couple years ago, but the best basketball of his career, last night notwithstanding. So, again, I get what you're saying in that you would hope that in terms of the immediate, in the present, that would all result in being a winning team right now and maybe a chance to do more this year. But I think if you're looking big picture the way this team is, you'd have to say they're further along 46 games into the season than I think anyone thought they would be.
No, that's totally fair. And you know, Cash, I actually agree with everything you say, but I only push back so we can create an hour of content. So just you know, bear with me as I continue to just disagree with you over the hour. No, but yeah, even looking at the game last night, like, you know, it was just such, I felt like it was such a quintessential 2021-22 Raptors game. Like, you had your terrible first half, 67 points in the first half. Like, coming into the game, I was like, okay, I get it. It's the second half of a back-to-back. But this Chicago team has been slipping, and they were missing some key players. This was a gettable game. And the Raptors, again, you know, like they've done, like, for half of their games this season, like, came out and you know, didn't really give a really good effort in the first half. Credit to the Bulls, blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know, like, I look at someone like Scotty. You mentioned Scotty. Like, I didn't think he contributed much in the first half. And then he ended up having a pretty good game when you look at the box score. 16 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists in 38 minutes. And the whole team obviously turned up that defense. And we've seen glimpses of that this season. I'm thinking about, I think it was the second half in Memphis. You know, I can point to the games that they played in Milwaukee. And even last night in the third quarter and bits of the fourth, you saw that swarming defense that I feel like was the main attraction for this team coming into the season. But then, you know, you get to the fourth quarter and it's just little things, right? Like from leaving Vucevic open for that three that clinched the game at the end, or even Delano Banton, who's played well in the last couple of games. Even last night, 24 minutes was a plus 16. He misses two free throws in the fourth, which was huge. And overall, the Raptors were 17 of 28 from free throws. And then there's a play I wanted to talk to you about with Gary. So Gary was great last night. Ridiculous shot making. 32 points in 37 minutes. 6 threes. Now with 2 minutes left, he drives to the basket, gets a bucket, cuts the lead to 2. And the Raptors are pushing at this point. He wanted a foul and immediately reacts to ref Tony Brothers, who's right there, by just clapping in his face and probably saying a few things on the no call, picks up a technical. Zach LaVine hits the technical. And more importantly, Gary had a technical earlier and he got tossed. I don't know, man. I'm not really trying to defend Gary on that play, because if the refs are terrible, don't give them a reason to be terrible is my thing. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think for sure, especially A, given the game he was having, given where they were in the game, a tight game late in the fourth quarter, no Fred VanVleet, so you know how important your shot creation, shot making is to the team on that given night. 100%, Gary's going to be more disciplined there and kind of swallow his pride and realize it's not all about him, right? It's about the team. Like, there is no room to get yourself thrown out of a game like that. So I'm not at all defending him making that decision, but I will also say that, like, you know, as a ref, you also need some grasp of, like, nuance and context. It's very easy to say, you know what, if something's a technical 6 seconds into the game, it should be a technical with 2 minutes left in a close game. But again, that is not, I don't think, having the right grasp of context and nuance. And I'm sorry, but tight game, you know, you've already given the guy a tech. I don't think him, you know, whether it was clapping in his face or kind of really, like, aggressively slapping his own arm to show that he had been hit is what he was trying to do. I don't think you need to call that for the second tech of a game to get a guy tossed in a tight game down the stretch. So again, not defending Gary. He shouldn't have done it given the circumstances, but the refs need to realize sometimes, you know, the 20,000 people or however many people were in Chicago last night didn't pay to come see them. And unless you really, really, really need to make a decision like that, don't.
Yeah, I love that saying when people are like, you know, nobody paid to see these three refs. We need to track down a fan who actually goes to NBA games to watch how Tony Brothers is sprinting up the court. Yo, we need ref advanced stats, man. I want to know their speed. I want to know their steps. No, I completely agree with you. But as a radio personality, I'm going to push back here and just say that, you know, in the history of basketball, like, no one's ever gotten a call, you know, arguing, asking for it after the fact.
Correct.
You know, for me, it's like a vet move.
Well, MJ once.
Yeah, okay, fine. But a vet move, I've seen that video. The vet move is to just have that conversation, like, at the next stoppage and play. And I get it. Trust me. It's a heat of the moment. It's a close game. He felt like he should have gotten the and one. And, you know, I'm not taking that away from Gary. But it, for me, it's just like, this is just a microcosm of just little things, right? And then, like you talked about, this is the growth. It's the little things. It's the free throws. It's, you know, one missed defensive assignment down the stretch. It's the fact that the Raptors just don't have any shooters. Like, without Fred and with Gary, you know, tossed out of the game, like, the offense really didn't look good in the last couple of minutes. So, like, I don't know. Are they just going to alternate wins and losses for the rest of the season? I'm ready to put a bet down on that, by the way. That they're just going to alternate wins and losses.
I mean, I think they will, by the end of the season, end up somewhere around 500. I think depending on how maybe injury luck plays in the second half of the season, you know, depending on whether maybe Scotty can take an in-season leap, that would be pretty amazing. But in general, I think they'll end up around 500, whether it's a little above, a little below, or right around, right at 500. I don't know, but that's where they're going to be, because I think, again, that's where this team is. And barring something significant happening at the deadline, I think that's where this team will end up. And I think they'll end up right in that play-in mix. Again, if things, you know, break the right way in the second half, they might snatch that sixth spot, but I don't think so. I think they end up in the play-in mix, and I think they end up with a good chance to end up making the playoffs proper. And from there, we'll kind of see how some of these young guys who haven't been on a stage like that perform. But I think if anyone's expecting better than that, or expecting that this team should be much better than that, then it's their own expectations that probably need to be checked.
Wow, this guy's speaking directly to me right now. So how much stock do you put in, like, young players, like you mentioned, a lot of guys on this team? Some guys on this team obviously have the playoff experience, but how much stock do you put into the importance of, like, hey, getting two play-in games or getting a best of seven first round series against a number one seed towards, like, the development of young players?
I think it's big. Look, you know, some of it is definitely, you know, just like typical coach or media talk, but I think some of it is legit. And Nick Nurse has talked about it a bunch too, where it's not just, okay, it's being able to say I played a playoff game, or, you know, seeing how this guy performs in the playoffs, but it's the little things that players get exposed to when the games count or in the playoffs that is important for their development. It is the understanding and the experience when it comes to being able to not just shape shift within the game, but you know, adapt game to game, how the game plan adapts from one game to the next in a series, how you solve problems from not just a quarter to the next, but a game to game basis in the playoffs when you're preparing for the same team. Like, there are a bunch of little things that go into it that I do think it is important for young players to be exposed to and to learn under. And I think especially so on a team that is coached by a guy like Nick Nurse, where there will be a lot of those you know, adjustments and little attention to detail things that happen throughout a playoff game series that I think it is good for a young player to be exposed to. So in that sense, I think it's big. I don't think it's going to completely change the trajectory necessarily of who a player is or what they might be, but I do think there are little things that make a difference.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about this earlier in terms of managing expectations for this team and, you know, understanding that they're on this path towards building. When you're looking ahead to the trade deadline, and for me, more towards the offseason, you know, I think you can look at some of the improvement coming internally for next season, right? Like, I think we know what we have in Fred and Pascal. I think OG is still, you know, his trajectory is still going up. And obviously, I think there's going to be a lot more expectations on Scotty next year. And to an extent, even guys like Delano, who you might expect in a year or two to be a really solid rotation player. But as much improvement as it does is going to come internally, how much do you think this team needs to add, you know, whether in free agency, trade, or draft, to really fill out this roster? Because, like, even though Nick is playing more than six guys now this week, like, the rotation is really thin.
Yeah, they need to add, like, NBA rotation caliber depth pieces for sure, because you can't survive a season playing as few guys as they're playing, especially in the modern era. So they definitely need to add just, like, straight up rotation caliber players. To your point, maybe, you know, for as great as he's been as an unheralded rookie this year, maybe by next year, Delano is a very consistent NBA rotation player. There are avenues where it could come from within, but I think they need to go get a couple more guys like that. I don't think it's a secret that they still need a starting caliber center, and preferably an above average one. Like, they don't have to close with that guy. They don't even necessarily have to start a big, but, like, for as much as we talk about how great their size is at other positions, and it is, and as versatile as this defense is, and it is, and the fact that their bigs can do things traditional bigs can't do, you still need a rim protector on the roster at some point, and preferably one who can give you starters minutes and who is an above average guy in his role. That doesn't mean he's got to be exactly 7 feet tall, but he needs to be a rim protector. And I think they need to go get one of those. And if they can find, you know, obviously I know the dream scenario for a lot of people would be someone like Miles Turner, but someone that can both protect the rim at one end and space the floor on the other end, that's obviously the fever dream. If they can get one of those guys and shore up the depth, I think they're actually a lot closer to that contender status than maybe most people give them credit for.
What about, because a lot of fans have been asking about just the shooting from this team, right? The lack of shooting. You know, what do you see being the fix for that? Is it a matter of you need to actually go out and just, you know, get an elite level score?
I mean, when I think about, like, internal, okay, obviously Fred's a great shooter. OG has become a good shooter in his career. Other than that, like, I'm trying to think, there aren't many sharpshooters on this roster. I mean, Sfi, obviously, you can't rely on him to give you good rotation minutes.
Yeah, he's banned from the show, yeah.
you got to get better shooters for sure as part of that depth, you know, those additional depth pieces. But short of that, like, how do you remedy it? Again, Nick Nurse and this player development staff here have a reputation for being able to develop guys into shooters, but I don't think you can develop a roster of not great shooters into an elite shooting team. Some of that has to come externally. And I will say, from a strictly scoring perspective, whether it's shooting or not, because his shooting is also ahead of schedule, Scotty's development is the big thing here, right? Like, if this guy reaches his upside sooner than later, like, if, say, him being ahead of schedule continues and he's an all-star wing by year three, that solves a lot of problems too, because whether it's with his shooting or just generally scoring, adding that kind of a player, like an all-star wing type, to Van Vliet and Siakam and whatever OG might be at that time, or whatever they get from some of those guys by that time, like, that's the great equalizer. But that's obviously also the big question mark, because as Joe Wolfon, my podcast co-host, often says, and he's absolutely right about it, like, development isn't always linear. It's easy to say, okay, well, Scotty's this now, he's ahead of schedule, so by next year he will be this, but it doesn't always work out like that. There could be, whether it's a sophomore slide or just some leveling off, it's not necessarily going to keep going up. If it does, I think that does solve a lot of their issues.
No, I think that's fair. And I think it's interesting talking about development not being linear, and I'm sure Joe Wolfon's going to send me four graphs right now to prove that point, is that, like, there's going to be much more scrutiny on Scotty next season. Because, to be honest, like, if, you know, I usually let rookies just play through their first season, understanding that there's a huge adjustment curve, and you know, a lot of rookies just don't contribute to winning, you know, even though Scotty has, you know, many times this season. Like, he's had a lot of games where he's been really inconsistent, and you just have to chalk that up to being a first year. I think the microscope's going to be real heavy on him, maybe even starting next season, and that just might be a curse of him showing so much potential this year. But you know, that's enough of, like, the direct Raptors talk. You know, if they're a 500 team, we're going to devote half of the show to the Raptors. You know, I'm making up my new rules, man. Well, I'm sure we'll lose driving up to vacation right now to you know, parts unknown, punching air right now. Actually, I don't think he drives. I'm not sure. I don't think he has
in fairness, I don't know if 50% of this will have been Raptors talk. It's like 40% Raps talk, 10%
Listen.
On rice and dim sum items, and then whatever the 50% is coming after the break.
Wow, wow. If I had to bet on one Pound the Rock co-host to give me a pie chart percentage distribution on the podcast, I definitely wouldn't have bet on friend of the community, Joseph Cacciaro. So before we go to break, actually, I know I put this at the end of the rundown, but let's get into this Raptors Hall of Fame Museum of Artifacts idea that I wanted to introduce. And this is a thing that I want to ask guests as they come on the show is, let's pretend that we're building a museum of items for people to walk through, to learn about the history of the Raptors. I'm not talking about just, you know, box scores or jerseys. Like, sure, we're going to have that stuff. But I want very specific items that people should know about the history of the franchise. So, for example, the three that I have that I'm going to suggest are Masai Ujiri's Blackberry Bold 9900. I feel like that should be, you know, in a glass casing, you know, showing maybe the exact time that he messaged RC Buford on the Spurs, being like, hey, yeah, I'm going to need $5 million as well, in addition to Kawhi, if you want to complete this deal. You know, number two, I think this is an obvious one, Serge Ibaka. We need to get his original scarf that needs to be displayed. And my third suggestion is 24 empty beer bottles that were drank by Marc Gasol at the championship parade. So, Cash, do you have item suggestions that should go into this Raptors Museum of Artifacts?
Yeah, my best one is I want the movie ticket stub for Equalizer 2 that DeMar DeRozan used.
Holy, that's cold.
The night he watched Equalizer 2 and then came out of the theater to call Masai Ujiri back after realizing he had missed calls from him, where he was then informed that he had been traded for Savior Kawhi Leonard. I believe the date, well, the movie ticket probably would have been July 17th, 2018, or July 18th, 2018, depending on what time it was. But, I mean, look, all due respect to DeMar, I think he is a great player, deserves nothing but love, but if we're being frank, that trade was incredible. It resulted in a championship in the most championship exclusive of pro sports leagues. And so find that ticket stub for Equalizer 2, encase it in gold framing. And I want that at the center of this make-believe Raptors Hall of Fame. I'd say give me the transcription of the 2012 trade call that brought Kyle Lowry to Toronto.
Wow.
And I like that. You know what? Throw in Vince Carter's draft night hat, the Warriors one. So that's to remind people of that
you know,
transaction that resulted in what at the time was the guy who put the team on the map.
You know, I'm not going to lie, man. I come up with some wild ideas. I kind of like this one, man. We got to keep building this items list. And then because your items just got me real motivated too.
No one's beating that Equalizer 2 movie to stub.
Man. No, unless we get like the Jack in the Box receipt too. I believe he went there the same.
And DeMar's gonna sign it. DeMar's gonna sign it. It'll be like when Dirk signed the hole in the wall at Oracle that he punched when the Warriors upset the top seeded Mavs in 2007. DeMar's gonna sign the Equalizer 2 stub.
I love that, man. By the way, we didn't even talk about Alvin. Were you watching the broadcast last night?
Alvin called him out on his defense.
He said he wasn't even top 200.
But I love that. Look, Alvin went on. You know, he waxed poetic about how much he loves DeMar and why he's a great player. But he's not going to hide from, you know, like, I actually loved that. I thought it was funny. I'm sure, you know, they have a good relationship anyway. It's fine. But to be honest with you, I wish more analysts and TV guys in sports would be like that. Like, you can be honest about a player and it doesn't have to mean that you're hating on them. Like, DeMar's not a good defender. We know that. He's great in a lot of other ways, but no, he's not a top 200 defender in the NBA. Right on, Alvin. Boogie.
No, I'm 100% with you. I especially think that now that former players have occupied so much of the space in media, whether they're doing studio shows or, you know, play-by-play like Alvin, if anything, they have the best relationship with these guys because they played with them, they coached them, they know them, that they should be more honest than anyone else. Like they have the relationships to be able to say those things and probably just laugh about it after.
Yeah. So also, shout out Amy Audibert's analysis. We were talking about this off air too, but her X's and O stuff when she's in the analyst chair, also great. So a lot of good analysis in Raps games this year.
Yeah. No, shouts to Amy for sure. Friend of the program. So we're going to take a 5-minute break here. When we come back, got a little surprise for my friend and co-host, guest co-host today, Joseph Cacciaro. And we'll also talk about how to improve the All-Star Weekend experience. I'm your host, Alex Wong. You're listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm your host, Alex Wong, and I continue to be joined by The Score's Joseph Cacciaro. Cash, how's your five-minute break, man? I missed you.
It was great, man. It was great. I guess I missed you too, but
did you file a complaint to the condo board about yeah. the fire alarm disrupting the guest hosting of the century?
I let them know I was doing an hour of Sirius Radio, and if they could please leave me undisturbed. And they said, "You're lying. We heard you read off the entire menu at Rosson. There was nothing serious about that." And I guess
yeah. So to start off the second segment, let's continue expanding your dim sum list from 5 to 100 to see if you're really about it. No, actually. So one of the things when you came on last time is you told people that I like to make you feel really good whenever we hang out, whether it's at the arena or whether we're out. And, you taking the time to be a guest host today, it's super appreciated. Everybody, make sure you check out Joe Cash's work at The Score on The Score app, Score YouTube channel, subscribe to Pound the Rock, all of that stuff. So, I told some of your friends and coworkers that you were going to be guest hosting today, and they were so excited that they were like, "Alex, can we please leave a voicemail on the Raptor Show voicemail line?"
You did for Will's birthday. You got
to congratulate Cash on this great career opportunity. So, producer Derek, I believe we have a few here. Can we play the first one?
What's up, Cash? It's Wolfond. Just wanted to congratulate you on finally landing your dream co-hosting gig, one where you finally get to be the smartest guy on the show. Proud of you, brother.
I got a bone to pick with Wolf on, because he not only said he's smarter than you, he also said you're the smartest guy in the room today, which means I'm the dumb person on the show. Which, hey, Wolf on, actually, no arguments. But all I gotta say is radio hosts are like rookies, man. Development is not linear, so just give me some time, Wolf on.
Nice.
So this is Wolf on efficiency. He upset two people in 14 seconds.
Yeah, I'm mad now. So we're recording tomorrow, so I'll have to get him back somehow.
Yeah, no, but you and Wolfon have great chemistry on, and I feel like now that you guys are recording twice a week now, you guys are getting a little bit more unhinged on air, which I appreciate. Like, I feel like the banter just goes off into like all these different directions now.
Did you think it was unhinged to suggest that a bull should be able to punch Grayson Allen square in the face in the middle of an NBA game? I guess does that constitute as unhinged now? I guess it does.
Oh yeah, but by the way, give a quick 30 seconds for people who might not have caught that episode. So you believe that when the Bulls and Bucks play again, I believe they're playing tomorrow, right?
Well, I don't know about that. I know they're playing on March 4th. I might have missed that they're also playing tomorrow, but I know I saw
Okay, I don't know if they're playing tomorrow. I might have just made that up. Don't listen to me, anybody. But like, you think next time that they play each other, that someone on the Bulls should just be allowed to punch Grayson Allen in the face?
I mean, I don't know how much I can say here on a station that is part of an NBA broadcast partner, but I may or may not have on Pound the Rock, which you can listen to Tuesdays and Fridays or anytime, really. That's when new episodes
implied are, that
anywhere
might have implied
you can
that.
Find podcasts. I might have implied that I believe low minute Bulls player should have the green light.
Man, you're asking Matt Thomas Grayson to do a Allen. Lot. You're asking Matt Thomas Grayson to Allen do a lot right in the now, mouth. Then. Yeah. Oh man, that's why we call Joe Cash the spicy meatball, man. Okay, so great voicemail from Wolfon. Let's see who else we've got on the voicemail.
Oh, there's more?
Who else do we have?
Hey, Joseph, big fan, man.
Wow, you got
I cannot believe it. This is huge for you. I'm so happy. I can't believe that you're on the show as a guest host, man. Huge milestone. I know you've worked really hard to get here. So proud of you, man. You keep doing your thing. I'm going to be listening in any chance I get. I hope this is not just a one-off for you. Congratulations. Oh, man. Keep being an inspiration. You're a huge role model. Hopefully one day I get to be just like you. Thank you for being so incredible at the work that you've been doing.
Well, we're not going to have time for it anymore.
Yeah, no, this whole segment is just about
Shout out Ash. Shout out Gabe.
Shout out to Ash, you know, part of the social media team at The Score, close friend. Yeah, he was really excited. He was like, yeah, let me grab that voicemail number.
One third of our group chat big three.
Yeah. I hate group
chat. And a legend in his own right in this industry.
That's how you know we're close, because I don't do group chats, man. So we actually have one more, I believe. Yeah, let's play this last one, Producer Dick.
Buon pomeriggio tutti. Sono io. This message is for Giuseppe Cajario, a.k.a. Joey Cash. It is Mark Savelle calling you from Dufferin and Lawrence, the number one Etel Canadian realtor in the city, the 416. And I just want to give a quick congrats for you for being the fill-in host of the century. It's a big accomplishment, and I'm glad to see you've come a long way from that smackdown I gave you in 21. And don't forget it, I am forever the king of Clinton. But my question for you is a simple one. Any Raptor past the present, where are you taking him for Reveal Sanguigio in the city, and what toppings are you putting on it? Love to hear your response. Take care, guys. All the best.
So that was, you know.
Okay, I just want to clarify. Savelle's a legend in his own right? And he is the best realtor in the 416. But I want to clarify. There was no smackdown given. I beat him and his whole crew at various basketball shooting games in a old Portuguese man's driveway in the Dufferin and DuPont area, I want to say. And yeah, that's how that went. So let's clear that up.
Yeah, you and Mark Savelle got a weird rivalry. It's like Soprano season 3 vibes to me. But he did ask you a question at the end, I believe. He wanted to know which veal sandwich spot you were going to take a present or past Raptors player and what toppings you were going to put on it. So do you want to give Mark Savelle an answer?
Everyone knows the staples when it comes to veal in Toronto. I'm going to go with a place that I think right now they're actually not currently open because they're trying to find another location. But great spot in Scarborough called Agent Court Bakery that for me and my family made the best veal sandwiches, and you don't need a lot on it. Straight up hot peppers and some mushrooms. I mean, you can put some peppers, onions, whatever you want on it, but mushrooms and hot peppers on this sandwich, the best veal in the city. And who would I take? I mean, past or present player, I'd probably take Serge, honestly, because if we're talking about a guy who appreciates food and who would make it pretty entertaining, it's got to be Serge. You know, we have a history of eating together as well. I did once try to serve him cow, heart, and balut, but that would be my answer there.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, listen, man, you know, just want to show you some love and you know, make sure you know that, you know.
Appreciate you.
What's up? I thought you were going to say something mean to me.
No, not at all. But when you said there was going to be a surprise, I even thought, I was like, I bet you it's going to be some recording from Savelle. And you did not disappoint.
Listen, man, I am, if nothing, but predictable. So the NBA is announcing the starters for the All-Star game tonight. So I thought we would talk a little bit about the All-Star weekend experience, because earlier this week, they also announced a bunch of convoluted changes to the Rising Stars game. So this year, I'm reading this now and I'm already confused. So there's 4 teams of 7 players each who are going to play in a 3-game mini tournament, and it's going to feature 24 first and second year players, but also 4 players from the G League Ignite team. Now, the semifinal game is going to play to a target score of 50. So this is similar to the Elam ending that's been introduced in the All-Star game the past couple of years. And the championship game target score is going to be 25. And in addition, there's a clutch challenge sponsored by Clorox, where 8 players on the Rising Stars will be divided into 2 squads and have to recreate 5 historic shots made during the NBA playoffs. First of all, that last clutch challenge is actually pretty cool, because I want to see Scottie Barnes in a gym trying to get 4 bounces in the corner like Kawhi for like 6 hours. But other than that, do we really care that much about the Rising Stars game to make it this deep, Cash?
No, we don't. But my argument would be, because we don't care enough about it, that I'm cool with them experimenting and trying to find wrinkles that make it, whether you want to say make it more entertaining, or at least make people perhaps want to tune in, if nothing else, straight up out of curiosity. If they've achieved that, then I think they've succeeded. Like, it's the Rising Stars game. I don't think you're necessarily trying to make the game itself the best possible product as much as you want to make it more watchable. And I think if even for 1 year they've done that, then they've succeeded. Other than that, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm interested to see that clutch shot thing just because I think it's so weird and funky and like, yeah, like I don't know. It's just strange to me. You're going to have guys trying to recreate iconic shots. I think it's going to go poorly and it's going to be kind of cringe and it's going to be like a really bad dunk contest in a way where, you know, it gets kind of quiet in the arena and no one really knows what's going on and why has this guy failed this attempt 17 times, but whatever. I think people will tune in even though it might be a bit cringe.
You know, instead of calling it Clorox Clutch Challenge, they could just call it horse, is all I'm saying, because that is essentially what you guys are doing. But out of 10,
also, Cash, one of the things I beat Savella.
Oh my God. So one of the things we're going to get a 25-minute voicemail that I'm going to have to play on air tomorrow from him. I can't believe this. Anyways, out of 10, with 10 obviously being an incredible experience, what would you give just All-Star Weekend in terms of the events that and the way that they're set up right now? Like, what would you give the viewing experience for All-Star Weekend out of 10?
Out of 10? I mean, I guess I'm biased because I'm, you know, a basketball nerd, but...
We know Wolfon hates All-Star.
Yeah, no, I'd give it like... I mean, you got to consider it in comparison, I guess, to other... Like, you can't compare it to the average sports viewing experience. Obviously not as great as watching like an NBA playoff game or a good NBA game, but I don't know. I'd give it a 7. I think for All-Star purposes, it serves its purpose. It's good enough. Like, if you're talking about actual, like the actual game itself and comparing it to other All-Star games in other sports, I think it's, you know, other than maybe baseball, it's probably the best one. And in the weekend itself, like the dunk contest is up there, I guess, with the home run derby in terms of, you know, All-Star related events that people want to watch. Again, whether it ends up living up to the hype or not, but people want to watch it. So,
I didn't know we had a Joseph Cacciaro, a PR for Adam Silver in the NBA front office, joining us here in the second segment.
I mean, some of the stuff sucks, but again, it's All-Star Weekend. Like, you know how it is. They got to try to do something that like appeals to kids. They got to try to make something that's watchable. It's like family friendly. It gets kind of crazy.
I just think it could be a lot better.
No doubt.
And I've got 5 ideas for you.
Wow, 5. I was going to say, you'd think it could be better. Give me an idea then. You came with 5.
Want to get your feedback on this, okay? So pretend you are working PR for Adam Silver, and I'm pitching these to you. Let's see if you can improve them. Idea 1, instead of this convoluted Rising Stars, merge the Rising Stars and Celeb game. How about Cade Cunningham crossing up Common as he tries to rhyme Cunningham with another word? How about Scotty Barnes dunking on Kevin Hart? How about Evan Mobley drawing a game-winning charge on Quavo? Are you not watching this on Friday night, Cash? Are you approving idea number 1?
I would approve it. I think that NBA team decision makers would be a little concerned because you listed the best case scenarios. What you didn't list is like, insert celebrity. Like Adam Sandler accidentally blows out star rookie's knee. Like, you know, it's...
But that could also happen. That's at risk whenever you play against anybody on the court, though.
Right. But I think they prefer if that's going to happen, it would be another NBA player, not a celebrity. I mean, to be honest, I was even thinking like getting the Ignite guys into the Rising Stars game. Like, I wonder if it's going to be like if the Ignite players are going to be taking it a lot more serious or as some sort of showcase as compared to, you know, the Rising Stars who see it more like an exhibition. To quote Apollo Creed's trainer Duke, this was supposed to be an exhibition. I think we might see some of that if some of these Ignite guys take it a little too seriously. And I think we would definitely see that if you had celebs playing in the Rising Stars game.
Yeah, once again, if you want great basketball analysis, but also great movie references, subscribe to Pound the Rock, my favorite NBA podcast. Idea number 2, this is less of an idea, but just like I wanted to strip the dunk contest down to just its essentials. Like no more props. No more jumping over cars, no TikTok dancers or like Victor Oladipo singing karaoke. I just want classic dunks, okay? If you want to do the Clorox Clutch Challenge, then let's do that for the dunk contest. I think each dunker has to be told to replicate a classic dunk. And my other suggestion for the dunk contest is go on tape delay and just edit out all the missed dunks. Because when you're watching it on the broadcast, that's what sucks the energy out of it. So that's my pitch for a better dunk contest.
I mean, it's not bad. My counter to that would be, isn't that kind of what it is already, other than the tape delay? Like, I feel like the last 5 to 10 years is a lot of young guys trying to recreate old dunks or
Yeah, but I want it to be like a specific challenge. Like right. maybe they can be assigned like, or hey, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Player X, you have to recreate specifically this dunk from yeah. Vince. But, like that's your only mission on this dunk if you can't do it. And you get graded on like yeah. How well you pull it off.
Yeah, but we all know the problem with the dunk contest is just that there's no star power.
Yeah, because like these guys are afraid to lose is what my theory.
Yeah, so they I don't know how we actually fix that, by the way.
I think too many players, especially young stars, see it as like there's nothing to gain from it, right? Like they're at a point where they're so marketable already, they're so from early in their career and deservedly so, that should continue. But I think there's just not as much to gain from like a star being in the dunk contest anymore. Whereas back in the day, it was like something stars did, right? Like every good young star was in the dunk contest if they had hops when we were kids. And that's not the case anymore. You end up with these kind of like sometimes fringe rotation guys in the dunk contest that the casual fan doesn't even know who they are.
No, that's totally fair. I think this ties to my next idea, which is I think it's just time to make the three-point shootout just like a marquee event and just expand it on the Saturday. Like I always feel like I never come away from the dunk contest now being like, oh, I wish there was more. Whereas the three-point shootout always kind of leaves me wanting more. Like I want more participants. I want more rounds. I also want more gimmicks. You know, I know they've started to do different gimmicks, but I think it'd be cool if they designate, like, back in the day, like, when I played NBA Jam, like, these, like, special spots on the floor. Like, you can shoot, like, four-pointers, five-pointers on the last rack. But, like, when you shoot them, you risk also losing that same number of points. So in going for the win, wow. you could just fall all the way out. So if you attempt a four-pointer, obviously you can get 4 points, but if you miss it, you deduct 4 points from it. I think we should embrace the three-point shootout.
That's been your best idea so far.
Yeah, I appreciate you just throwing the all the other ideas under the bus, you know? I'll try to, once again, like I told you, development is not linear. So that's the one that I want. Let's see what else is there. No more skills challenge. My whole proposal is just that it's boring. I don't like the skills challenge. Do you like the skills challenge?
Nah, I mean, it's boring. It's definitely the least watchable thing as part of All-Star Saturday. And to your point, maybe if you got rid of something like that, you could expand the three-point contest or make another part of the night more entertaining. But I don't know. You know what the skills challenge is? It's like the time filler, you know?
I'd rather have Common pull out the 500 NBA players and try to rap all of them. Would you watch that?
I mean, I might more than the skills contest. You need something to fill the time while people are, I don't know, buying hot dogs or whatever it is they do in the time between when they get in the arena and when they're sitting down. Because that's what the skills contest is. It's a time filler until the main events.
Yeah, wow. This guy's hating on the arena hot dog, my favorite. So,
the funny thing is, I was going to say, I ended up saying whatever it is they do, I was going to say, you need a time filler for like that 15 minutes when Alex is scarfing down a couple hot dogs before the main event gets there. I didn't want to say it, but since you brought it up, I will now say that.
All I ever do is make you feel great, and all you ever do is the opposite, Cash. So the last...
You brought it last up. Idea. You brought up yourself eating hot dogs.
Listen, the last idea... Well, what did I want to do? Oh, yeah, I wanted to fix the actual All-Star game. From an aesthetic standpoint, listen, Nike, you have failed with the All-Star jerseys. They're terrible. They're terrible every year. Every player should just wear their own team jerseys like they used to for a couple of years in the 90s. Aside from that, I don't really, I guess, have much complaint. I mean, the Elam ending, I think, really added a lot to it. I'm not sure if we can add some stakes to the game. Like, I obviously don't want it to be like back in the days when baseball used to award home court, like home field advantage in the World Series based on who won the All-Star game. I don't want something extreme like that. But I'm always trying to think how to make it more competitive. And we've got 60 seconds here, 30 seconds for you, Cash. Any thoughts on fixing the All-Star game?
The actual game, no, I agree with you. They should go back to everyone wearing their own jerseys. I will say that the selection process should be better. If they're not going to do East versus West, then just go with the 24 best players, regardless of conference. As far as something entertaining for All-Star Saturday, it's a completely made-up thing that would never fly. But imagine if you can guarantee no injuries and you do a charity boxing match between whoever the two biggest guys having a beef that year are. Jokic versus Morris this year.
Udonis
randomly
Haslam,
Siakam versus Portis, whoever.
Yeah, this will be charity Udonis Haslam fighting everybody. Appreciate it, Cash. Make sure you check out Joseph Cacharo's work at The Score. That does it for us for today. I'm your host, Alex Wong. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Thanks again to Cash, to my board producer, Derek Brandeo. I'll talk to you tomorrow.